When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
And welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now from One Wisconsin Now, it's Scott Ross. Scott, long time no talk.
Hey, how are you today?
I think the last time I saw you, I was at a horror movie.
Yes, I, yes, indeed. You got to see my, it was technically not my big screen debut, but my sophomore follow-up episode.
That was great. It was a funny movie.
I don't know if you saw my name in the credits, but my character was Racist Tea Partier.
I saw that.
I channeled my you know, as you know, I'm from southwestern Pennsylvania, and I channeled my Trump voter, and it was filmed before Trump was even a candidate. So you
took yourself to Washington, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Ooh, I spent a terrible. The New Year's between the New Year's for 1990, I spent in Washington and Jefferson University at one of the most horrifying parties I've ever had the displeasure of being, and those are my friends.
Hey, well. You know, there's a bright new day. We've got people, Connor Lamb. The Connor Lambs of the world are coming. And that's an interesting question for you. You're not going to talk about millennials running for office. They don't all have to be the same, do they?
Absolutely not. I mean, it's just been my contention. You know, and again, you and I, there are a couple years between you and I. I'm 48.
Uh-huh, and I'm 57.
I'm going to be 49 on Donald Trump, Fighting Bob, Flag, or Che Guevara. I don't know, the birthday we all share.
I share a birthday with Mr. Rogers. So.
There you go. Also from southwestern Pennsylvania.
Exactly, right.
My contention is that for the last 25 years, a lot of the economic messaging that inevitably drives our narrative by coming out of Washington, D.C., has been focused on three issues in particular: Social Security, Medicare, and my employer-provided pension is under assault, which, Sly, are all absolutely fundamental and incredibly important issues, and if you don't support those things, you have no business being a candidate. But my contention is that for those of us who are under, 50, the vast 120 million of us, those issues don't resonate. They certainly aren't getting our folks to the polls, and they're certainly not helping us win off-year elections. And so what my thought is that, if you want to turn people on, you got to turn them. If you want to turn people out, you got to turn them on. And talking about economics, post-boomer economics, I think is the near future of how progressives are going to get folks elected. Here are things that you face every day that I have a plan to solve, not esoteric things, talking in state politics about those issues that are federal. You may think you're helping, but again, voting is a selfish act. It's not altruism. It is A to B logic. How is me pulling this button for you, pushing the button for you, Sly, going to make my life better? And that's what I think, where progressives, or at least the Democrats, have in some ways failed to recognize a changing of the times, because we literally have the same consultants from, the last several generations, and then their children become the consultants, and they're still trying to prove the same theories that have not been working for 20 years.
So you've put out a manifesto. Let me just see how this checks any of the boxes. Last night, we were recording this as of Wednesday morning.
Yes, and let's just, can we pause? Happy 78th birthday to Doug LaFollette.
I'm supporting him.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I know you are. I see Facebook. I ran against him in 2006, as you know.
I supported you. I supported you.
I know. You are an enigma, Sly, that is to say the least. But go ahead.
I
just want to take the opportunity to wish a belated happy birthday to my former opponent and dear friend.
All right. Yeah. And dear friend. Exactly.
No, he's great. Listen, I ran into Doug in the Capitol, I would say, like 4 years ago. And he looked at me and he's like, you know, Scott, this seems to have all turned out pretty well for you. And we had a good laugh. And I patted him on the back.
That's pretty funny. All right. So last night, Gavin Newsom came in first in the jungle primary in California. He is Scott Walker's age. I would say I think he's done a better job in public life as far as the issues he's honed in on than Scott Walker. But here was from his speech last night.
I'm humbled by the overwhelming engagement of Californians that have united around our, you know, message of optimism, our message of audacity. You know, these days, too many politicians want to tell us what can't be done, but our can-do campaign painted in bold colors and big ideas. Guaranteed health care for all, a Marshall Plan for affordable housing, a master plan for aging with dignity, a middle-class workforce strategy, a cradle-to-college promise for the next generation, and more important perhaps than anything else, an all-hands approach to once and for all end child poverty in California.
How does that stack up?
I mean, he's got some good, I mean, there's definitely some good things in there. And I'm not saying that you don't talk to every, I mean, you don't, you know, reach out to all of the different swathes, you know, I mean, because let's not kid ourselves, like, the campaign may be a foregone conclusion because it's California. And, you know, hopefully, I would say this, this is what I see from Democrats when they get elected to executive offices, that they tend to remember that, and compare this with Walker, they remember that campaigns are, in a sense, about dividing people, right? You got to break off enough pieces to get your voters out there. But governance is supposed to be about bringing us together, and I think that's what Newsom's message was. It was definitely a let's bring everybody together. Contrast that with Scott Walker, obviously, who's never done anything but continue to try and appeal to, you know, the basest of instincts of the people he thinks will need to go out to the polls, and he continues to govern in that same way because he wants to punish his enemies, and he's always got his eye on the next election.
Are some of these issues tricky, though? Because, you know, he did mention dealing with the elderly and aging. For millennials, their parents are hitting those issues. And, you know, when you have parents, that becomes your issue as well, even though you're not in
that. Yeah, no, listen, Sly, that's why we, in the agenda, we put together the Tomorrow Wisconsin agenda. Number two is paid family medical leave. Because particularly for Gen Xers, like, you know, my parents, you know, my mom was bedridden, my dad is currently bedridden, and, you know, should someone have thought I was decent enough to breed with, I would have kids right now who would probably either be still in secondary or college. So, like, Gen X is the one that's getting hit on both sides with the need for things like paid family medical leave, because we are dealing with both ends of the family continuum, our parents and our kids, both in need, and we're supposed to solve everybody's problems.
Do you want me to call this podcast, "If Someone Thought I Was Decent Enough to Breed With," Scott Ross, in quotation marks?
So that's
by the way, I'm very sorry to hear that your father is bedridden.
Yeah, you know, Amy's getting better. He's almost about to use a cane, okay. But he's just like riddled with cancers that appear to have all been cut from him, but it's, you know, it's a long recovery, and he had a complication where, you know, he was about 250, and he was always an athlete, but he went down to about 180, 185, so, like, just being able to get around has been a big pain in the butt. But my brother, who is a proud AFG union member who helps veterans get their benefits out in Pennsylvania, has been helping him out, and I'm doing what I can from here, which is, you know, providing care.
It is tough. You know? Let me ask you about something that happened in the United States Supreme Court that really didn't get a lot of attention. And I read a piece in the New York Times on this. These young workers and workers of all type are being forced into these, you know, binding arbitration contracts.
Oh, absolutely.
They were 2% of the population had them in 1992. Now it's up to 54%. The Supreme Court made a horrible, horrible decision. I've been talking to labor lawyers about this over the last couple of weeks. They say the consequences for that decision are going to be absolutely devastating for workers. Shouldn't a legislature, you know, the Supreme Court did not preclude changing that binding arbitration law, which was never written for workers. It was written for business to business. You know, this, you know, thank you, Neil Gorsuch. They took the most narrow view of this and screwed workers.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's a despicable decision. It's a despicable act. And the arbitration thing, and let me just say, I am not an expert, but I first came across it back, I think in like 22, right after the recalls, David K. Johnson wrote a book called The Fine Print, which is basically about how, like, you know, how government working with businesses essentially taking all of your money and giving it to themselves. And I believe this whole change in the arbitration law, or this whole, you know, this putting in contract, this putting in, you know, things that young employees sign that say, oh, yeah, you'll go to arbitration, which is totally weighed in favor of the businesses. That was the first time I was exposed to that. Our research director here was a consumer, you know, her specialty out of law school and where she worked after was in consumer law. And, you know, as soon as, like, she was talking to us about just how devastating and horrendous this case would be for workers and the fact that they ruled in favor, like, not unexpectedly ruled in favor of big business. Was a real blow, and that there are things, like you say, there are things that could be done now. It's not like the fight's not over.
Absolutely not. Russ Feingold was talking about this in 1994, and it wasn't just with workers. It was with credit cards getting forced into binding arbitration on credit card rules and other business agreements that consumers
are stuck. Utilities, yeah.
Yep. So I guess my question for you is, you know, we live in this economy where young workers, you know, they haven't brought up in the mindset that you were in a union household. They've been brought up in a mindset of, well, I'll do this for a while, I'll do that for a while. I'm kind of my own agent. But they don't, you hit some roadblocks along the way. You can be as independent and educated as possible. But if you're trying to pay off a student loan and you're trapped in one of these binding arbitration agreements, it kind of hurts your upward mobility.
No, without a doubt. I mean, you know, we live in an economy right now where the, you know, single greatest asset for business is its ability to depress wages. You know, that is where businesses are making their profit margin. And it's something that's got to be stopped. And I absolutely, completely agree with you. Again, you know, we have five tenets in our Tomorrow Wisconsin agenda, and wages, you know, wages and job security is number four on the list. And it's only number four on the list because I had to put student loan debt first. You know, but I mean, it's absolutely 100% critically important for everybody, right? You know, and this is, again, our agenda is not about like saying, oh, you know, the baby boomers screwed us, you know, so we should, you know, hit them back. Job security is for everybody. I mean, we all hear the stories about people who have worked at a company 35 years and are being shown the door, even though they, you know, their pension's been taken away from them. You know, they won't have access to health care and all those sorts of things. So, you know, we're not divided by age in terms of how businesses are screwing workers. It's, you know, the one thing is that it would have been nice had the boomers been a little bit more vocal about the need to keep and protect unions when they were being decimated throughout the Reagan years, for instance. But not everybody, obviously. Obviously not everybody.
Well, you know, I'm a late baby boomer.
Yeah, no, of course. Well, listen, there is a wide continuum of you 80 million, that's for sure.
And it isn't just white-collar millennials and Gen Xers. I want you to think about this. You know, for blue-collar people that are working cars in jobs where they drive, and that's a whole other issue with the automation that's coming, you know, we've got companies like Jimmy John's forcing them to, drivers of subs and pizza, to sign no-compete contracts.
It's insane.
I mean,
it's so despicable, like, to be beyond, you know, beyond discussion. You know, we are so dead set on, again, but look who has the power. You know, I mean, we basically have one party in the United States, and we have Donald Trump's, you know, minions. That's what we have at this point in time. You know, people say, oh, yeah, this is, you know, he changed things. We've been careening towards this for a long, long time. Paul Ryan is just a pampered, you know, athletic version of Donald Trump, because they're out for themselves and they're out to protect their own wealth and they're out to augment their own wealth and they're out to protect their friends and the people who help them. That's simply the way it is, and that's the way the Republican Party has been moving for quite some time.
Well, now, to be fair to the Republicans in the first congressional district, they came up with someone who's a fresh face with some new ideas. That Brian Stile, he is on the cutting edge for millennials.
He really is. I mean, it's just, it's impressive how, like, I don't know, what did they do? How did they do that? Did they, like, go and, like, you know, did somebody in Congress go into the House gym and, like, mop up where Paul Ryan was either posing or sweating and put that into a Petri dish and mix it up with some, you know?
No, they went and found the towel snappers in the locker room.
Right?
Yeah. Metaphorically, that's kind of what they're doing.
You know, because, I mean, you couldn't have somebody who is more identical, another pampered elitist who will do nothing but screw over workers. There is no doubt about it. That's what Brian Stile, that's what Brian Stile will do for sure. And, like, you know, hopefully, what I'm hoping is at some point in time, you know, is there going to be some attention paid on what he actually, his most recent sort of endeavor, which is at the University of Wisconsin.
How'd that go?
Oh, I mean, you know, like, let's just point to the whole attack. We're going to expel students who protest, racists, xenophobes, homophobes, sexists, anti-worker people. And they're basically trying to turn the university over into the, Bradley Foundation's, junk science laboratory with those clowns like Noah Williams and Ryan Owens. You know, and just like what they're putting together in terms of the garbage and junk science.
You don't think Rick Essenberg should be the chancellor?
He'll be the new dean of the law school. that'll be his job. But I mean, that's the thing. Like, I mean, again, like, Scott Walker is willing to do and say anything to try and win an election. He has been trying to kill the University of Wisconsin, in part because the Bradley Foundation, which is, of course, was headed for 15 years by his campaign chair, has doled out, over $100 million to school privatization, almost the same amount to organizations that support attacking rights on workers. And I give you a good example, Sly, and I think you and I may have talked about this way back. When they were doing the right to work bill, the Republicans pulled up 8 different organizations to testify in favor of right to work. Every single one of them was financed by the Bradley Foundation.
All right, stand by. We'll take it from there. Scott Ross, One Wisconsin Now at SlysOffice.com.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
We're back at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Today, Scott Ross from One Wisconsin Now is with us. We're talking a little bit about the manifesto the One Wisconsin Now put out about millennials and Gen Xers. What percentage of the public are they as far as the voting bloc now?
Well, right now, Gen Xers and millennials are the largest voting bloc in America. They surpassed the other voting blocs in the 2016 election. And one thing I would say in terms of the whole Gen, it's nice when your science fits your worldview. I'm not going to lie about that, right? But in 2016, 37 million Gen Xers voted and 36 million millennials voted. There's about 80 million millennials and about 42 million Gen Xers. So look at the percentage of Gen Xers who actually vote. It's like around 86% of Gen Xers are actually going out to the polls, and it makes sense because we're like 35 to 52. This is our, this is where we're worrying about retirement. We're worrying about our kids. We're worrying about our parents. We're trying to figure out, are we, can we, when our car goes. How is our next car going to be, new or used? How are we going to do with the student loan? Oh, wait, we finally did it, but we didn't have time to, you know, save for our kids' education, job training, that sort of thing. What are our kids going to do for jobs? Like, you know, all those things. We are like, so of course we're going out to the polls. And yet our leaders have, for the most part, ignored the economic issues that are unique in following 80 million, you know, the largest population of folks who, you know, sort of changed government in a way that, you know, it didn't exist before, in terms of the deinvestment in you know, not just Reagan's first deinvestment in public infrastructure, but a continuing of 30 years along that route.
Inspiring this group of people is using people from the past, and I'm going to play another clip here from Gavin Newsom's speech last night. Is using people from the past okay? Here, let me. And this is sort of unique and historical messaging, because Bobby Kennedy was killed 50 mm-hmm. years ago,
June 5th, because it was 50 years ago to the day that Senator Robert Kennedy stood on stage like this and claimed victory in the California primary for president. As all of you know, it was the last speech he would ever give. Decades later, we still mourn that loss, but tonight I prefer to be inspired by his legacy. He once said, "There are people in every time, in every land, who want to stop history in its tracks. They fear the future, mistrust the present, and invoke the security of a comfortable past which, in fact, never existed. In California," he said, "of all states, that change, although it involves risks, is the law of life."
All right. Now, I think that's kind of a nice way of using the past to look forward.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, I mean, listen, like, there's a lot of people who've done a lot of great work to get the United States where it's at. That's for sure. And they're not all, like, 210 years old. You know what I mean? They're not from all, like, colonial times, for sure. And they're not all from, like, necessarily the 1960s. So I think you can. All I'm saying is that you can't ask people to keep going to the polls to support the economy of people who aren't them. And that's all we're saying, is that you have an ability to, you know, it doesn't cost a penny to start talking about these issues, you know, to talk about student loans. I mean, that's a thing where, like, I mean, I know from my research, again, it's nice when your science fits your worldview, but, you know, I've been talking about student loan debt going back to 2010. And right now I know that there's around 1 million people with student loan debt in the state of Wisconsin, and 80% of them vote in every election. So the idea that you wouldn't try and talk about, you know, a good solution, like, say, refinancing your loan like you can a mortgage, is just political malpractice, you know? And the thing that bothers me that I don't hear, you know, when I don't hear our elected officials, and I would say 2014 was like this, 2016 was like this. Like, our Democrats are always vocal about, oh, why do I always have to be against something? Why can't I be for something? The press says we're not for something. This is an issue that you could be for. And yet, I didn't see the only place I saw a piece of media done by a political candidate that paid to talk about student loan debt was up in the 30th Senate District, Dave Hansen, who the Republicans swept the area, except for Dave got sent back to the state Senate. So if you turn them on, you're going to turn them out. And if you talk about things like student loan debt, if you talk about things like, for instance, being able to buy into the state pension system, why can't people buy into the state pension system? Why are we left to the devices of the IRAs and the, you know, financial advisors who skim enormous fees? Because we don't understand exactly how to make the trades that need to be made to, in order to get our, you know, I mean, there's long, you know, like you were talking about the fine print, or we were talking about, you know, about arbitration and the fine print. That is a perfect example of an industry that reaps huge amounts of money for small profit for the people who are investing, because the people investing don't understand, simply don't understand, and don't have the capacity to understand, because it's not their job.
All right, now here we are at the portion of the program where I play some Scott Walker, and I'm admitting right now that I'm playing this to set you off. Okay.
If you play that damn Glenn Schulfer song.
No.
I'm going to come through this phone.
No Glenn Schulfer today. This is just Scott Walker's introductory re-election ad with him in that speed racer helmet.
Oh, please do.
Hi, I'm Scott Walker. I love Wisconsin. Every day is a chance to make things better for the people of our state. More folks are working than ever before because we're open for business. Our budgets are balanced and we now have surpluses, so we lower taxes. At the same time, we're investing more into schools than ever before. Test scores and graduation rates are among the best in the nation. More families can afford to send their kids to college because we froze tuition. More people have access to health care here than just about anywhere else in America. I love traveling the state and hearing how the things we're doing are helping. But there's more to be done. Investing in training for our workers, helping people create jobs, making our schools even better. At the end of each day, after all the miles of conversations, I can't wait for the alarm to ring. See what opportunities tomorrow will bring.
Are you with me?
Do you have a hanky to wipe the tears away?
Oh, yes, I do indeed. Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, this is the funny thing. Like, you can tell, I mean, if you watch Twitter and Facebook and that sort of thing, you see Walker is constantly throwing up these memes about, you know, we have more people working than ever before. Well, yeah, there's more people alive ever before, you know? And, like, if you're struggling and don't know if you're going to be able to make your student loan payment, or you don't know how you're going to pay for your parents, you know, how you're going to take time off because your parents are sick, like, you don't care about these stats and numbers. And that's the, you know, and I think that's the importance of having a positive, proactive agenda in terms of whatever the Democrat, you know, whoever the Democratic nominee is for governor, because, you know, you won't beat Scott Walker by making, you know, by proving he's going to make the state worse. I mean, you're going to beat him by proving you'll make it better, but you have to talk about things that are going to make people want to go out to the polls, because the simple fact is, Sly, is that for 30 years we've had one person win the governorship on the Democratic side, and that was Jim Doyle, who had been on the ballot three times before. He was elected after 16 years of Republican rule against, you know, the lieutenant governor, who was a very nice man, I hear. And
pretty good basketball,
you know,
player.
Yeah, right. And Ed Thompson was in, and that took a bunch of, you know, a nice chunk of Republican votes. My point is that the reason Democrats are not prevailing in these off-year elections is because their voters aren't showing up. But if you don't talk about the economic issues they have, you can't blame them for not showing up. You know, and that's where I think we see this. And I think that the higher education debate is one place in particular where we can just see the absolute and complete disconnect by the people who are advising political campaigns and by the people who are actually voting in political campaigns. Because if you recall, in 2016, there for a nanosecond, the issue of student loan debt and the 44 million of us who had $1.5 trillion of student loan debt were addressed for a nanosecond when Hillary Clinton came out and said, you should be able to refinance your loan like you can a mortgage. And then Bernie Sanders came out and said, you know what? You should be able to refinance your loan like you can a mortgage, and hell, let's send everybody to college for free. And Hillary said, let's send some people to college for free. And it became a debate over college, freedom for college. And let me tell you why that debate is so toxic, Sly, because you literally just told the 44 million people who are paying monthly bills that they don't matter. And I'm going to raise your taxes so that, you know, I guess what, people in the future can go to college for free. And the fact is that the people who are sending their, you know, the people who are going back to college trade school and the people who are sending kids to college are now Gen Xers, and we all accept the idea that there's going to be some student loan debt. So telling me if I'm still paying a student loan that, again, we're going to try and make people go to college, you know, allow people go to college free, it is a great aspirational thing for when you are in power, but it is not something to run a campaign on, because it's literally telling the people to vote that their issue doesn't matter.
You're on message today.
Well, I just, you know, I mean, I'm, you know, again, when the science fits your worldview, it's a nice, comfortable bed.
Let me ask you about the State Journal endorsing John Plummer for the State Assembly.
Yes, please do.
I'd never seen a political candidate after he had been arrested for throwing things around the house, shoving his wife, shoving his daughter out the door, literally throwing his own daughter under the bus after he got caught. Didn't they vet this guy?
Apparently not. I mean, you know, again, I don't want to make any light. Obviously, like, it's just, you know, those allegations are incredibly troubling. I think they're probably disqualifying. I've seen some other folks, you know, the National Organization for Women in Wisconsin was talking about, you know, how terrible this was and how this is, you know, we should be moving beyond the point where we're trying to elect, you know, where we're putting up candidates, where people are putting up candidates who have spousal abuse in their past. And yeah, I think you said it right, you know, best. The guy threw his daughter under the bus and blamed his daughter.
Well, of course, this came out after the State Journal endorsement.
This came out after that ridiculous endorsement. And again, like, you know, listen, I promise you this, Sly. I promise you this. This is a promise I'm going to make to you, and it is to try and earn both your endorsement and your money. If I am ever a candidate for office again, when I specifically don't have, when I do not get the endorsement of the Wisconsin State Journal, I will pay to make literature that says not endorsed by the State Journal to try and win my election.
Well, you know, I've already endorsed you once for political office. So,
But anyhow, they endorsed him. And this is the thing that makes me, this is the thing that set me off. And all, you know, and I tweeted one thing to the editorial page editor, which is basically like, are you kidding? Like, because, and again, redistricting isn't my big issue. I'm more about like early voting and voter ID, but I recognize how important an issue it is, right? And the State Journal endorsed Plummer, in part because he said that he would support independent redistricting. Okay? They have written that same endorsement editorial for Todd Novak and for Howard Markline, who are also in the area, and they are also Republicans. Sly, how has that redistricting been going?
Oh, real well. They're pushing real hard for that. And by the way, the 42nd Assembly District is possibly the most gerrymandered assembly district in the state.
Absolutely.
Was the only way to keep Keith Rip in power because he was so dumb.
You know, and just remember in the spring election we just had, like, Rebecca Dallet won the 42nd. You know, the Democrats won, or I mean, you know, the however you want to say it, like, right, Democrat, whatever,
busted.
Democrats, Republicans.
Busted.
I'm not gonna, you know, it's not my job to like run for Supreme Court. There's a Republican candidate, there's a Democratic candidate, and the Democratic candidate stomped the Republican candidate and won the 42nd district. So, like, there is great opportunity there, especially because, again, in these special elections, there is a lower turnout. Your vote matters more, especially if you don't normally vote. And Democrats are running to the polls. They are running to the polls, and so that is why, you know, there is an opportunity for Democrats in this seat, for sure. And I'm trying to think, like, the last time there was a special election in the Assembly that was won. I remember one 19 years ago I worked on up in Antigo where Sarah Walker got elected.
I was up there doing doors. I think I bumped into you.
Yeah, I did. Quick aside, the most wonderful thing happened in that race. So I'm up there knocking on doors, and I go and I knock on a door, and this guy with white hair comes, and he's like, oh, I just love, the candidate's name was Sarah. I just love Sarah. You know, you tell her that she can, you know, let me get you a check first. And he went and he wrote a $25 check, and I've never, like, that's never, you know. He's like, you tell her if she wants to use me, I will go on TV and I will go on radio, whatever she wants. You just tell her, I just think she does a fabulous job. And I must have given him a look like, who the hell are you? And he went and put his glasses on. It was Ray Zamanda, the Menards guy, who ended up doing television for Sarah, and she won by 217 votes. 237
It's
votes.
A good thing John Menard didn't find out about that. That would have been the end of Ray's man.
Right, exactly. And who just passed away not too long ago.
Yeah, that's actually. Right. That is correct. That's an awesome story. All right, Scott Ross, One Wisconsin Now. If you want to get involved with One Wisconsin Now, how do you do that?
You go to onewisconsinnow.org. You can go to our Facebook page and our Twitter, at One Wisconsin Now. And we have a nice Wild West show, so you are free to offer your opinions. And on about the important things, and you can take a look at our economic agenda and see if it fits your fancy.
And by the way, I don't think that you're going to be getting a check from Leah Vukmir.
No, I don't think so.
You saw her agenda, right?
Yeah. No,
more union busting.
Yeah, she's terrible. Just terrible.
Scott, thanks for coming on the show.
All right, you take care.
Slysoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.